Welcome to the Sons of Mjolnir podcast.
The Sons of... what?
This isn't your Sons of Macaroni, yeah!
The Sons of Mjolnir?
This is Sons of Mjolnir,
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Sons of Mjolnir. As always, I am one of your hosts, Fat Thor. Unfortunately, Cap and Gorgon are off saving the world today and could not make it, but I am joined by a very, very special guest, a very dear friend of the Sons of Mjolnir. You probably know her as the Friendly Neighborhood Bi on Twitter. She's the host of the Friendly Neighborhood Comic Show, and you do a couple other podcasts as well, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's only down to two. I do the YouTube channel and then the Simply Amazing podcast that is focused on, can't see his head with the way of my camera, but that's Nightcrawler, I promise.
So. Yes, so a fellow podcaster and, like I said, a very dear friend of ours, Lauren, the Friendly Neighborhood Bi, thank you so, so much for coming to Nerd on the show. This has been a long time coming. We've rescheduled, like, I think maybe 20 million times over the past, like, couple months. So thank you for finally coming on, and I'm so glad that we were able to finally lock a date down to do this.
Yeah, absolutely. No, thank you guys for coming on. I know Cap and Gorgon, they're the best of us. So, of course, they're saving the world. And they said, do it anyway, guys. We got the world. Don't worry. So,
yep.
Yeah, they're the best of us doing that. But no, I'm so happy to be here. You guys are hugely awesome. You guys have such a great platform. So I'm just honored to be here myself.
Of course, of course. And like I said before, you've been such a great friend to us. We were actually on your show. Jeez. Yes. Couple months ago now, it both feels like yesterday and a million years ago all at the same time, because that was Judgment Day, and that again feels
oh my goodness,
yeah, like that feels like forever ago now, but it wasn't that long ago. But other than that, though, I mean, you have just been so supportive of us when we started this podcast. You were one of the people that, you know, we reached out to in the beginning for some early advice. You always share our stuff. You always comment on our stuff. And I mean, you just have been such a great friend to us, and we could not thank you enough for being, like I said, friend to us, supporting us. And, you know, again, I'm so happy to have you come into our neighborhood now since we came into yours. Welcome to our neighborhood.
Oh, well, the neighborhood's open to everybody. That's one thing I wanted to do with the channel. It's on hiatus currently, but that's one thing I wanted to do, is create a network basically where, you know, because the goal of it is everybody is friendly and positive. Doesn't mean we'll all agree on everything. We're still gonna disagree as nerds do, right?
Yeah, like, we're still nerds.
Right. We all still have our favorites. Like, I'm gonna say I want Supergirl above everybody, and I'm gonna get yelled at about other characters, which is valid. So but the whole point of it is that, you know, I wanted to create a network where basically if somebody's like, if I want to get into comics, but only have the best of the best podcasts, they're positive, they're helpful, they're friendly, they have all different types of tastes, where do I go? How do I find the right podcast for me? And so essentially my hope one day is that this neighborhood, you know, can essentially be where somebody can say, hey, are you a big Batman fan and you like reading reviews? Well, Wes Greer, who's a friend of ours as well, does a lot of Comics the Gathering stuff, biggest Batman fan on the planet. You know, this guy's approved by the neighbor. He is friendly. He is positive. He's also got your biggest hookups on Batman and a gazillion other things. Here, go there and see what's up. So the neighborhood isn't necessarily something that I want to make a platform to, you know, show myself off or what have you, but something that I want to be, to bring people together. That's the goal one day, you know? So, I'm just happy to be here. And that's why I wanted to support you all from the beginning, because you all are so positive. You guys want that positivity to grow amongst other people. And believe it or not, that's actually a hard thing to find amongst comic book fans, especially podcasters. Is it's very hard to maintain that positivity when we all have very strong opinions, myself included. It can be very tricky sometimes, but I think it's more important than ever.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, that's one of the things that we really love about you and your show is, like you said, the positivity and just the inclusion of everybody. And something else I really love about your show is that you include the audience in almost everything you do. And like you said, it truly does feel like a neighborhood. And like you said, shout out to Wes. We have a couple other mutual friends, Derek, Lex, Lost in Comics, Chris over at Lost in Comics. And I mean, it's just such a great community of people. And I'm going to let you guys, everyone out there, know who's listening and watching, your favorite comic book podcast we talk to each other. We're friends. We talk to each other behind the scenes.
Oh yeah. And a lot of us are friends. And then of course there are people that you learn, you're kind of like, I don't vibe with them, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the biggest thing though, is that even though there are people out there that I don't agree with what they do, or I don't think their message is helpful or effective, I don't waste my time hating them. So if anybody ever asks me, who do you want to call out that is not positive in community, I'm going to redirect the question back onto positivity mm-hmm. and shouting out people like you guys and all the other people you named as well that are great. And what I like too is that, you know, we're not like, it's not like a clique, I guess, in terms of like, oh yeah, we only talk to each other and that's it. Like, yeah. Again, you know, like we're all friends here, and everybody has another connection to somebody in the community that you don't know, which is really cool too. Mm-hmm. So like, if I'm ever like, I'm trying to do this thing, but I'm not sure how, and I ask, you know, you brought up Chris at Lost of Comics, and I ask him, he says, well, actually, I'm not sure how much I can help with that, but I have a buddy who knows something about that. Let me get in touch mm-hmm. with them, you know? And it's just really cool to see that kind of change. So we don't all have to be best friends all the time, even though a lot of us are really good friends, but we all have that just mutual respect and understanding mm-hmm. and just that, you know, that desire to say we're all in this together, even if you're not my best friend. You know, it's kind of mm-hmm. like in general when people are like, well, of course I care about that person, they're my sibling or they're my best friend. It's mm-hmm. like, no, I care about this person because they're another human being that's a genuine fan that wants to do something really cool mm-hmm. and I'm going to do what I can, even if it's not that big or whatever, I'm going to do what I can to help them get what they need to get, you know.
Yeah, 100%. And I mean, I could not agree more. Like, that is literally my whole like ethos in life in doing this. Like, I say this all the time, and I feel like people sometimes think I'm just like being funny or something mm-hmm. but I like genuinely get excited for our like not e- like I guess our podcast friends, but even just anyone on Twitter that's like mutuals with us. Like, I get so psyched when like Wes gets a shout out from like Tom King, or, you know, Chris gets an awesome guest, or, you know, you guys release a new show. Like, that literally, I get so excited. And like you said, I think that's really a great attitude to have. And I think a lot more people need to have that yep. kind of attitude, which is why we, like you said, we're friends, and a lot of us in the community, if you would, are friends with each other, because it is hard out here. Like, we talked about being a nerd, like there are very strong opinions, and some people are rather rude with those opinions. And yeah. like you said, I mean, we've talked about it before on the show. I've, you know, talked about it on my own platform, but I would never want, like, there's things I don't like and there's things I do like, but I would never ever want to like shit on someone's work just because it maybe isn't my particular flavor. You know what I mean? Right. And that's something I really strive to always do, is, like I said, be positive. And I mean, all these creators, you know, as well as I, you've interviewed way more people than I have. But, you know, no one goes into something being like, I'm going to fuck this up. You know, everything right. that is made, whether you love it, you hate it, that artist or writer fully intended to deliver some kind of message with that, right? Or like genuinely right. believed in what they were doing. So it's not fair for me to come on my podcast and be like, this is shit. So, like, you know, like, again, there's nothing wrong with not yeah. liking something, but you don't got to go all in on it. So yeah, like you said, yeah. I love that attitude that you have, and you just exude that through your, you know, your Twitter account, your show. It's just, it's so welcoming and friendly, and like I said, it's just I love all the stuff that you do over there.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, I think you brought up Lex earlier. Lex is with the Wednesday Poll List, in case you guys don't know, or you heard the name and you're like, what's that? But so I used to write a lot more for the Wednesday Poll List, and every once in a while when something comes to, you know, I might write something mm-hmm. Lex is super chill about. He's like, write what you want, go for it. I was like, really? Like, even when I first started, I was just like, so what guidelines do you have that I need to follow, things like that. He's like, go for it. I was like, mm-hmm. okay, cool. I'm really appreciative of how much he trusted my voice and platform even before he got to know me more, and you know, got to see kind of how I write and things like that. But I remember one point I contemplated, you know, when I was starting to do reviews of comics, and I read a comic and I didn't really care for it, and I was like, should I write about this? Because, you know, there can be value at times in writing an honest review that's not intentionally trying to scathe, but you're being honest about this didn't work for me or what have you. And eventually I decided no, because I was like, look, if I open the can of, oh, I'm just being honest, then where's the line for me? For some people that might work and that's okay. But for me, I was just afraid that if I want one review that's like, yeah, I didn't like it. And that's the whole review is basically, I didn't like it. Then eventually one day I might feel like, oh, well, I can write something and say, I hate it. And of course, people, I think, you know, for anything, whether it's comics or video games or movies or whatever, of course, saying you really hate something gets clicks. It gets attention. It's a very strong perspectives get attention. People really like that, and they also hate it, and they hate to love it. And that's one thing I've actually been learning about in general is the power with audiences when they love to hate someone or something. And it's actually garnered many famous people that you know of a ton of success by going that route. And I didn't want to do that. I'm like, listen, other people may do that and make the best of it, and that's awesome. It's not for me. So I chose distinctly to stay away from that. And I'm grateful I did, because that would very much go against what I try to do now when I do the channel, which is be positive and all that. You know, other people in the comments, you mentioned earlier with engaging with the audience, and that's my favorite thing about the show. And why I love the live show so much is my goal is to engage with the audience and get you guys excited and talking to each other. I want you guys talking to each other more than you talk to me, to be honest. I'm so appreciative and grateful when people talk to me, because that's where I get to have fun. But if the audience is having fun just talking amongst each other, I've done my job, I feel like, you know what I mean? Yeah. And so sometimes in the, you know, in the chat, people would have some more strong opinions. But even when that happened, I think just the atmosphere that me and my co-host Chase were eventually able to create and things like that, even people had the strong opinions, it seemed people took them better than I guess they would in other contexts. You know what I mean? Whereas, like, you know, if you go on some other big YouTuber's channel that probably has like a million subscribers and all they do is freaking complain about everything, well, then of course everybody in the chat's going to complain about everything. So yeah. I think the power we have in our platforms is super important, and I can't stop anyone from using their platform to hate on things. I can't stop it, but what I can do is control what I want to bring into it. So that's what I try to do, and I think especially with comics, I think it's more important than ever.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, you try, and I mean, I gotta say, at least from my end, you absolutely succeed, because said, if there's anything anyone can say about your show, it's that it's welcoming. And like I said, and everyone, if you guys haven't watched Friendly Neighborhood Comic Show, please go subscribe, go watch it. Like I said, you will be welcomed with open arms. We were, and like I said, now we're podcasters too, so who knows, maybe you'll start a podcast, right?
that's the thing. It's like, what is it, like, it's like Ratatouille, where the chef that the rat really loves, that Remy really loves, says anyone can cook, you know. And it's like, listen, of course everyone can podcast. It doesn't mean everybody's going to have the same quality, quote, podcast. Everything is subjective as heck. It's not objective once you start doing it. You know what I mean? But that's not what matters. What matters is that you can technically do it. And as long as you enjoy it, and hopefully, even if your thing isn't all positivity, you want to have some criticism or even some negativity in there, it's fine. But as long as what you're doing is still helpful and, you know, building a community that hopefully doesn't just focus on the hate, I think it's a good thing. You know, like, of course people are going to have more strong atmospheres, and I mean, we have a very strong atmosphere too. I'm very vocal on the channel. Like, if somebody wants to say something about Supergirl, I will destroy them on site. I have no problem with that. And I still let, you know, other people that may love other characters put me in my place too. I think it's that, just that mutual banter. And that's the thing I think that makes it fun too, is that yes, we're welcoming, but we're not just like, you know, it's not just like Blue's Clues where everything's just like, oh, we're all happy and blah, blah, blah. Like, yes, we're happy. And at times we get frustrated and we're going to be honest about it. It's important to have a place where you can explore feelings like anger, frustration, sadness, and do it in a place where, you know, you're not going to get in trouble for sharing those feelings. And hopefully you won't hurt someone else's feelings by sharing those feelings.
Yeah, 100%. And I mean, I totally feel you on the, like, trying to balance criticism. And like you said, I mean, in nerd culture, it just comes with the territory. Like, you're gonna have difference of opinion with someone, you know, and you're gonna, you know, go at each other a little bit. But it's like, it can still maintain fun, you know, like while I may people out there know who follow me on Twitter, I am no stranger to dunking on dorks. I love to dunk on a good bad take, but I always try and do it in like a place of fun. Like even if like, I think this like comment is very, you know, in my opinion, stupid, or like, you know, I don't agree with this or whatever, I'm never going to be like, oh, you're an idiot, you know, or like the Jane Foster Thor stuff is a great example for me. Like anyone who follows me has seen me get into it with people on that. But again, I always like, at least in my opinion, I don't think I'm ever like mean to people. Like I just like, it's all playful, you know? And
well, yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, it's the people they're being sexist for no reason and they can't recognize that. Right. Yeah. And that's something that we're not therapists. We can't deconstruct that for them. So you might as well have fun with it.
Exactly. Yeah, like, exactly.
Why? Like, it's not my job to be their therapist. And, you know, to that point with the sexism, like, it can be challenging at times being a woman podcaster because there are things I know that I could do that would get me certain levels of attention, I guess. Mm-hmm. Like I could dress a lot more cutesy or feminine. I could do this. I could talk in a higher pitched voice. Like there's a lot of things that sound little that I could do, but it's a lot of things that like women podcasters do. Some of them do them naturally. It's just who they are, which is amazing. Yeah. Right. And other people may do it intentionally because it gets views and stuff. And I don't fault them for that. But I choose not to do that because I can't not be authentic. And I think that's really important with audiences. Like my, you know, when I'm an audience member too, we see through BS, you know, we see when someone's inauthentic a lot of the times. Sometimes people like that. Sometimes people are like, oh, they're playing this character. This character's entertaining. So that beats the authenticity that matters. But if you're not entertaining, then all you've got left is your authenticity. And you can't, if you don't have that, you have literally nothing to go off of, right? And my thing is to be authentic and again, to help bolster up not only the community, you know, as in, you know, fellow readers and podcasters and things like, but also the creators. You know, I want creators to feel like this person has my back.
Yeah.
You know, even if I'm not the best of friends with every creator and I don't know them all the time, I want to make them feel like this is your interview and I'm here to support you in any way I can, you know?
100%. Yeah.
And I think a lot of people see it too. Like, especially when creators have come on to live shows, people get to kind of see that interaction live, and a lot of the interaction that, or banter you see live that you may be like, okay, they're having up for a show, that's how we talk behind the scenes too. It's just less filtered probably, you know? So I think that's one of the things that was really hard for me when I was like, let me take a step back from the channel for a while finally, is because I so badly want to continue boosting creators' content and continuing to give people a positive place to talk about this stuff and also to interact with creators, like creating that bridge between a creator and how they can interact with the fans beyond just Twitter and things like that, you know, especially now that Twitter is going to heck and I'm probably going to delete it. I haven't done it yet. But I'm just going to the one day where I wake up and say, I've had enough.
I say, we're all just like holding on that little thread, like maybe it'll get better.
It's really tough. And it's hard because I have so many other interests outside comics as well. So like I keep Twitter now for like to see dumb wrestling tweets and stuff.
Well, I mean, like, you got to stay in the news. You know what I mean? Like, that's how I feel, at least with Twitter. It's like, that's really all I have. Like, I don't do Instagram or TikTok or any of that. So it's like, I feel like if I'm not on Twitter, like, what am I going to know what's going on? I got to put on, like, the actual news on TV. What the hell is, like, what if it's 1965?
It's funny you mentioned that. Like, Twitter really has become news. Like, the first thing I hear about news nowadays, it comes to Twitter. So, like, I'll tell, like, my parents, like, oh, my gosh, did you know this happened? And my parents are like, no, where'd you hear about that? I'm like, Twitter. They're like, really? I'm like, I'm not going to watch WRL all day. Like,
Where do you hear stuff? What are you talking about? And, I mean, it used not to get on a whole big tangent on Twitter, but it used to be relatively, at least in my opinion, a good place to get news because you'd see it on there and people are literally live commenting on it like, oh, this is bullshit. This is true. Like, here's the source for this. But I mean, that has completely gone to shit with everything going on now. You can't believe nothing. But getting back to you, though, and your show and comics and all that great stuff, you kind of led perfectly into something I wanted to bring up in a little bit. But I mean, we can just get into it right now. I wanted to ask, you mentioned this already, being a woman in comics, and not only in comics, but in podcasting. I mean, that obviously I'm a dude, I'm a white dude at that. So like, I, you know, don't really have a lot of problems that, you know, people of color podcasters do, or women podcasters. So I wanted to ask, you kind of went into it a little bit already with, you know, how people maybe perceive women doing podcasts, and like how some people maybe lean into certain aspects of themselves, you know, in an inauthentic way. From your perspective as a woman in comics and podcasting, how do you feel that that kind of landscape is right now? That's probably a loaded question, but
I'm just like, man, where do I even want to start with this? Because it is a very loaded question. In terms of the environment today, it almost feels like other than we have more opportunity as women to actually do things and be supported and support each other, it almost feels like we're in the same place though. Other than, you know, there are so many great men, including yourself and Cap and Gorgon on this channel here, where, you know, everybody is super supportive of each other, super supportive of women. And it's just normalized, you know, it's not like you're trying to go out of your way to prove like, I don't hate women, you know, like, look at me go. It's just freaking normal, which is all we want, is that this stuff is normalized. And but unfortunately, a lot of the toxic stuff, particularly with men and comics and nerdom and things like that, it's the same stuff from 28 years ago when I was born. Like, it hasn't changed. But the cool thing now is that now we have it where, even though we still have quite a few people saying that stuff, Barbie is still a $1 billion-plus movie.
Damn,
you know,
straight.
We have men crying about how, oh my gosh, this film hates men completely. Well, there are plenty of men in that film that didn't feel that way, and they didn't do it just for the check. You know what I mean? There were people writing the music of the movie that were men that thoroughly enjoyed writing all those songs and all their lyrics. And you know, same thing with comics. I will say specifically comics, though, it's more of a challenge because I feel like there aren't that many women comic podcasters. And if there are, they're attached to men. For example, like Couples Counseling, which they are both absolutely wonderful. They're a couple. They podcast together, which makes perfect sense. I'm not saying they shouldn't. But again, you know, it's not a woman podcasting, things like that. And even in my case, you know, I started the channel by myself and things like that. I was actually told in the past that I needed to have a partner. Otherwise, my show wasn't marketable. I was told that because somebody offered for me to join their network of something. And they said, well, you get a partner. I said, well, this time, because it was early on, I don't have any plans. And they're like, okay, well, can't do anything with that, but cool for you. And I was like, great. But eventually I brought on Chase, who I don't regret bringing on because I wasn't worried about gender. I was worried about the right person, and that person to bring on as co-host just happened to be Chase. It is tough though, because even for me, I'm a woman podcaster, and it can be tough even finding women guests to come on my show. That is actually more challenging, and I'm a woman, and it's embarrassing when that happens because I'm like, well, I should just know every woman, right? Like, I'm supposed to uplift all of us and things like that. And even if I know women that enjoy comics, a lot of them don't want to go live and go on a podcasting show or something. And I don't blame them. Maybe it's their own personal reasons of anxiety and things like that. Maybe it's also they don't want to get attacked by men or something. I don't know. But it's confusing, I guess. And that's a big reason why I was so hell-bent on doing the podcast without taking a hiatus as long as I did, because I'm just like, you know, even though a lot of men watch my show, which is fantastic, it doesn't matter to me, because at the end of the day, I'm not only influencing women, I'm also showing showing men in general, this is normal for a woman to podcast. And I think that's important too, so that other men can, you know, be like to each other, yeah, this woman does a great podcast. Wait, a woman's doing a comic show? Yeah. And they just act like it's normal, because to them it is. Maybe the third guy, it's not, but to them it is. And I think that's really important, because us women, it's not just our problem with sexism and things like that. It's everyone's problem. And I think it's important that men, when they can and all that, you know, continue to, you know, support and uplift women in ways they can, and correct other men too, Which is something I've seen a couple of times from, you know, people in the community that I'm close with that are men. And I really appreciate that. Even if it wasn't public that they did it, even if it was something behind the scenes, I think it's really important. So that's why I keep my circle close. That's why eventually I stopped worrying about views and things like that, which mm-hmm. I think helped me stay authentic too and stuff. Because I remember, you know, I used to do this other thing in the past and they were starting to get worried about views and stuff, somebody involved in it. And I was like, why? We have people that love this. We love doing it. Like, mm-hmm. like, yeah, if we make money off it at some point, great. But like, otherwise, we didn't start this because of that. And that's yeah. why we realized again with this channel was, I don't care about the views. If I have 8 people watching every live at least, then I'm pretty happy because those 8 people are happy to be here. They go out of their way to make the time. And I think mm-hmm. that's something that is interesting too, is, you know, kind of like that monologue and Barbie being a woman, you know, there's all these contradictions, right? And so I think that's also why that's one thing I do intentionally sometimes, is I really try to emphasize how grateful I am for this community and for the people and things like that, because A, it's true, and also B, because I never want to boost my ego so much that people are like, oh, this girl is this woman's a freaking bitch, for lack of a way of putting it. You know, she just thinks she's almighty and all that. Mm-hmm. And I never want to seem that way. So it can be hard for me to accept like all the nice compliments and stuff, because I'm like, I'm trying to keep myself grounded. Mm-hmm. I want to stay as grounded as possible because people receive that better. And I think it also helps me be as real as possible with the community too, so that I never ever get this power hungry vision or something that I think all of us are susceptible to in the right situation. So mm-hmm. but yeah, being a woman, it's weird, it's kind of confusing in the podcasting community, but I'm pretty lucky because again, I feel like I have a nice tight-knit audience, and the people that have come in that are newer recently, they seem to be really great people, and they seem to find value in the messages me and Chase try to put out on the channel, which is the goal. You don't have to agree with everything we say or I say or whatever, but as long as the general overall messages we can agree on, then I'm happy. And I think that's what it's all about at this point. And I think if more women were able to get that more easily too, I think there would be a lot more women podcasting, but I don't mm-hmm. think that's the case, unfortunately. I think I'm one of the few that is very, very lucky.
Yeah, and I mean, just hearing you talk about it is just like, man, all the stuff that you have to think about, that, like I said, I mean, you just talking about, like you said, you know, oh, I gotta, you know, make sure I'm, you know, not too humble or not too this and not too that. And I mean, I just, that's why it is so, I mean, again, people who follow me on Twitter, who have watched our show, that's why it's so important to us. Like, that stuff just eats at me, because like you said, and we've talked about already, you know, comics, in my mind, comics are for everybody. And the same way that, you know, I looked at Thor and was like, that's my dude. Like, I see myself in that. Like, everyone deserves to see themselves in these characters and to feel like they could be these characters. The fact that people don't get that, it's just, we could talk about for hours about that. But yeah, like right. I said, I'd really appreciate you stepping out there and being authentic to yourself. And I think it goes back to what we were talking about a couple minutes ago about being authentic and being true to yourself. Cause I think that there's a lot of people out there that aren't authentic and are just right. looking for the views and, you know, oh, like I'm going to say this because people are going to get mad at that. You know what I mean? And, you know, that's something we've talked about here on our channel too, you know, behind the scenes, is that we're here because we love comics. I mean, that's why we're all here. Right. And, you know, if anyone watches our show and is like, hey, I want to check out that comic, or that sounds really cool, like, then my job is done, you know? And I right. think when you start focus, which, don't get me wrong, I mean, you've done it, I've done it, anyone out there that podcasts that's done it, you're upload a new video and you're like, oh, how many views has it got, you know, how many people watched yeah. it. But again, at the end of the day though, it's about the love of the medium. And you know, if 2 people watched our show but they loved it, that's what it's about. And I mean, just having the opportunity to come nerd out with great people like you, I mean, what what else could I ask for, right? Like, that to me is another major thing about doing all this that I think makes it worth it.
It does. And you know, it's one thing I realized, and I'm still trying to figure out what to do with this information, because one thing I realized is a lot of times as podcasters, so we have very hectic schedules a lot between our own personal lives, work, and then when we choose the podcast. And so a lot of times the only times we get to actually sit and just talk with each other, like not try to schedule something, just sit and talk like this. It's when we podcast. And so we'll talk forever and ever and ever for like 5 or 6 hours sometimes. Like I've done, like sometimes when I do the live, when I've done the live shows in the past, and Chase and I have somebody else on with us after the show, we end up talking for another hour or two afterwards because we don't ever have time or are able to make the time outside of doing a show or podcasting to just sit and talk. And it's like, I think that's what I think has been, I think that's the most important thing again is, you know, doing, I don't do the live shows for the fame or whatever. It's just to talk to people. It's about communication. And it's just such a blast. And I'm like, man, I really wish we could make time outside of recording an episode to release to public, like, where we could just talk and like shoot the heck or whatever and just have fun with it. And it's very hard to do that. And sometimes, you know, if you do that afterwards, you're like, man, we could have recorded and released that. But then it's like, nah, that was for us, man. We were just having fun. Like, yeah, maybe that would have been entertaining for other people and it'd be great. But man, that was just our thing and that's okay. And I think that's challenging too with podcasting is remembering that, hey, some things you don't need to record and release to the public. Some things you just deserve to have for you and whoever else is involved. And that's fantastic. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that honestly kind of leads into another thing I want to talk about. I wanted to talk about burnout a little bit. And you mentioned this already previously, that the Friendly Neighborhood Comic Show is currently on hiatus right now.
Yes.
And I know that I feel like this is something that a lot of people are afraid to talk about and or are kind of embarrassed to talk about. And right. I know me personally, I have 100% felt this and feel this all the time. And you know, it's like it makes me feel bad about myself sometimes, because I'm like, like my job is literally to write about comic books and talk about kind of like, oh, poor me. But you know, sometimes though, it honestly, like, if like I'm like, I when's the last time I read something just for fun? Like, not just, you know, don't get me wrong, I have fun reading everything, but a lot of times, especially, you know, with what I do now, everything I'm reading is for review or for a podcast or research for an interview or research for an article I'm going to write in the future. So I wanted to ask, and another good friend of ours, Sean, actually, from the Caption Life, he's also taking a hiatus. So again, I know that this is something that a lot of us creators and podcasters, writers, what have you, we experience this. So I wanted to get your kind of perspective on, like, when that occurs, like, have you found a kind of process to kind of get through that? Or like what it, like, I think everyone kind of has their own process to kind of get over that. So I'm just curious, like, what is your process like? And like, why do you think that that happens?
Well, I mean, burnout's different every time, I think. At least it has been for me. And there's different levels of burnout. So we talk about burnout like it's one general thing that we can pick apart. It's not. In my case, I know some other fellow podcasters' case, the burnout that causes, that I've seen cause a lot of hiatuses, including the one I'm on now, it's just my own personal life changes. It's my focuses have shifted. Like, when I started this podcast, when I started podcasting in general and writing reviews and stuff around 2020, 2021, I did it because, well, the person I was dating at the time wasn't around a lot. So I couldn't focus on that relationship a lot. They were gone. And so I was like, I love comics. I'd just gone back into them in 2019 before COVID shut down. And I said, well, you know, what if I could do something else? Like, what can I do? And so I remember one point, I actually tweeted about Killadelphia. That was one of the first comics, newer comics that got me back in, was Killadelphia. One of my friends had recommended to me, one of my best friends. And I read it and loved it. And so I went on Twitter and either, I think my friend had mentioned to me that the creators seemed pretty active and talkative on Twitter. So like, hey, tweet them if you want. So I randomly tweeted at them, and they actually replied to me. Rodney Barnes specifically did the writer, and I've interviewed him. He's absolutely lovely, but it was just so cool to me at the time. I was like, oh my God, a creator actually talked to me. Like, yeah. What? Mm-hmm. And at the time, it also unlocked this community with the Killadelphia fandom, in terms of there were a couple of people in the Killadelphia fandom that I started talking to, and that, because they're like, yeah, this is great, you know, blah, blah, blah. And so we started following each other and became mutuals. And so Killadelphia was actually kind of the opening into, and Wes was part of that community actually as well, Wes Greer. And that was kind of the opening into comics Twitter. And so as much as we all hate social media and we want to burn it all to the ground, I actually have Twitter to thank a lot for the podcasting stuff. Mm-hmm. And so at the time, it made sense for me to do it. It made sense for me to become a part of it and start doing reviews and doing another show at the time, because I had the time and there was nothing else in my life at the time that I really needed to focus on. The job I had at the time was retail. I could care less about it, but it paid the bills. I had time in between stuff at work to do things. So fast forward to now, I've had quite a few health issues that they're getting a lot better, thankfully, now. But I've had to really focus on that. Like, I'm working out pretty much, you know, at least 5 days a week between physical therapy and just working out with my trainer and on my own. Mm-hmm. And it's exhausting, believe it or not, especially when you're actively, like, I'm working on, I had to fix my jaw, and then it was my neck, and now it's my shoulders and my back. And I don't know anybody else that's listening to this or has done this before, building up your shoulders and back when they're messed up and you didn't know it, it is exhausting. And nobody tells you that. It is exhausting and painful, mm-hmm. but it's important. So I've been doing all that. And on top of that, I have a really great partner now, different than my previous partner I mentioned years ago. And, you know, I get to focus on that a little bit more, which is really nice. And, you know, my job, I have a much higher level in this new company I work for that I plan on staying with as long as possible, as long as things stay great. I'm very valued in the company. I have a very important role. It's hard for me to take these off, not because they won't give them to me, but because they need me a lot of the time. But anyways, and so all these new aspects, like, I have all these other things in my life pulling me now. Mm-hmm. And the comics podcast stuff is here, like, but what about me? And I'm like, that's a great question. What about you? Mm-hmm. And on top of that, not only is the comics podcasting being like, what's going on, but my comics love in general. It's not that I don't love comics, but I hardly read my comics. And lately, I've even been contemplating cutting my poll, not because I don't want comics, but because I'm not getting the same enjoyment out of going every single week now. Maybe I just need to go to trades or something. Who knows? Mm-hmm. And so I think that's what causes a lot of these hiatuses, is personal stuff. Our lives change around us, and how we're using our time changes, and what we need to do. So that's what I've seen happen a lot, and that's kind of what finally kicked it with this hiatus. Even before the health issues, though, I've been kind of feeling it before, the burnout, at least. And I think it was just more, it was trying to figure out at first, like, what I want to do. And I still am, like, if I do ever decide to start this again, I hope to, I just don't know when or whatever, but I want to do it when it's right. And when I'm like, this is my vision, even if it doesn't go right, that's okay. But I feel motivated, and I know doing this is going to give me some fulfillment in terms of reaching my goals, which are helping the community, helping creators, having fun, things like that. Mm-hmm. And until I can do that, though, I that was the final cut too, was I'm not authentic right now. I'm trying to come on these lives acting like I'm still in love with comics in the same way, and I'm not. And it's not fair to the others to see that, and it's not fair to do it. So let me just take a step back and just tweet where I can. And again, find my own love for it again. So I think you're right. Everybody has a different way of dealing with burnout. I think it depends on how intense it is and what's causing the burnout. And I mean, there's not one answer. Like, burnout's not like one size fits all. Here's your solution. Go.
Yeah. Here's your script.
Yeah. I mean, we had talked about on the Channel One episode, and then one of our most recent episodes before the hiatus, Chase actually said, well, what if we focus, because people talk about burnout quite a bit on live shows, at least. But what if instead of burnout, we talk about comics we can read that kind of help us get back and get out of burnout? You know, things that make us excited again. He had a different word for it. I can't remember. Yeah, and I did too. And I was like, oh my God, you're completely right. We should totally do that. And so we did. And unfortunately, that couldn't fix my burnout situation. But again, that doesn't mean that can't help. I think it's important to remember things you love. So more than anything, I think making the right decision and trying not to guilt trip yourself, because I guilt tripped myself for months at least. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't serve us a purpose. It doesn't serve the audience a purpose. It doesn't serve what you love comics a purpose. You know, just acknowledge what you're feeling. And even if you don't know completely why you're feeling it, just explore it the best you can. Mm-hmm. You know, take your steps back. But at the end of the day, you know, podcasting's not going anywhere, hopefully, you know, as long as the world doesn't end. And yeah. I will say, like, part of the challenge too with podcasting now is a comics podcast specifically is the Twitter situation. And now everybody feels dispersed, you know, audience mm-hmm. member, like people aren't on Twitter as much, or they're gone completely. And it's kind of like, well, how do I grab people's attention? And also, how do I connect with people in general now? You know, some people are using Discord, some people are on Blue Sky, people are still on Twitter, people are on Instagram, Threads. I mean, what do you do before it was, I could go to Twitter, and even if somebody else in comics had an Instagram, unless they were only an artist, they most likely still had a Twitter. 90% of the time they did.
Yeah.
And now there's no guarantee of that. And so it's kind of like, man, so I don't know. I think, yeah, burnout is tough, and you just got to deal with it the best you can. A lot of it is personal, though, which is why I think a lot of podcasters aren't going to, you know, give the whole spiel, because who cares about my physical therapy life or whatever? Nobody else cares, and that's
we care.
Fun.
We care, Lauren. We care here. But I
we
think,
care here. Yeah. New shirt for you.
But I mean, I think you hit it on the head. I mean, everyone, you know, has to kind of deal with it in their own way. But I do think there is something to be said about the, like I said, the burnout specifically in the comic kind of space recently. I know even Gorgon, co-host of the show, he pulled back his entire pull list, and he's only picking up trades now. And I mean, that's more so of like a time kind of thing as opposed to like a passion thing. But I was even just talking to the owner of my comic shop, and she was telling me that a lot of people are doing the same thing. They're cutting back on the weekly pickups, and they're doing more trades, or, you know, coming in, you know, maybe once a month as opposed to every other week. So, I mean, like I said, I think burnout is very real, and I think it's something, like we said, everyone deals with that. But right. Speaking of burnout and kind of helping with burnout, one of the books that actually did this for me recently, and I know that you are a huge fan of, and I want to talk about it, is Supergirl, Woman of Tomorrow.
Yes.
By Tom King. So I, like we were just talking about, I was kind of feeling a little like, man, like a little burnt out, like I got, you know, all this stuff to do. And I was like, I just need to read a book just for fun. Like, I'm not doing a review on it. I'm not podcasting about it, just purely because I want to read a book. And everyone out there knows I make the joke all the time. I'm the Marvel shill. So I was like, we're going DC today, baby. Like, let's do it. And I picked Supergirl largely because I know that you are such a huge fan of it. And I've heard you seen your tweets about it and talking about it. So I was like, I know this is good. And oh my God, I messaged you after I read it because I was so blown away by it. But that book literally blew me away. Like, I love Tom King. I mean, Mr. Miracle, another phenomenal book. But man, that Supergirl book was so, so good. So I, besides nerding out about how good that book is, I want to ask, I know that you have a very particular love for Supergirl. And so I know you love this story. Would you say it's your favorite story of Supergirl? And if not, what would you recommend for the people out there to pick up if it's not Woman of Tomorrow?
I would say it's her. It's so I was so almost relieved in a way. But I was just so blown away myself with the story. And I'm so grateful still, because I was like, finally, Supergirl gets her first epic story. Stories like Being Super, which is another really good Supergirl story, Mariko Tamaki, Joelle Jones, I believe, I have that as well. It's a good story. But I've been told in the past, you know, this is one of Supergirl's greatest stories. And I was like, I read it, and I was like, hey, this was a good story, but this isn't like a great epic that I go like, this is what defines Supergirl. Read this book now.
Mm-hmm.
And like Superman has those stories, All-Star Superman, whatever I think of. That's just one I heard recently. Yeah. Batman Year One, Batman The Long Halloween, Batman, like they all have theirs. Wonder Woman kind of has some, but they're less talked about, which I wonder why, anyways. But so Supergirl, I was like, she's never had her first epic. I'm like, when does she get it, man? And so when she got this, I was just like, finally. And I really appreciate that because, and I think the story is so good, not only because Tom King understood her as a character well, and I thought it was very interesting that he wrote from the perspective of someone else rather than Supergirl herself.
Yeah.
That was a very interesting choice. I've heard the story, and I've also personally compared it to Superman Up in the Sky, which I actually have. So if you like Superman Up in the Sky, you'll like Woman Tomorrow. It's still a little bit different, of course. But I think it's better than Up in the Sky, just by a little bit, to be fair. But because Supergirl is a different character than Superman, you know, people are like, well, why would I read Supergirl? Superman and Supergirl are the same. They're not. And a lot of it is, you know, just their personal experiences as characters, what they've gone through and what they triumph over. And they're both phenomenal. I love Superman. Straight up, I do. But I think Supergirl's character is so unique. And I think it's so cool that despite DC continuing to hold her back as a character for some reason, like Tom King wanted to do 12 issues of Woman Tomorrow, and DC said, no, you get only 8. First of all, how do you tell Tom King, which I'm not saying he's the best writer, but he's a very well-liked, he sells books right now. How do you tell somebody like that, no, you don't get more to sell us? Like, why would you do that? And two, I mean, why? The guy wanted to write it, you know? So anyways, I'm going off topic because I'm getting distracted.
Oh, no, please. Let's keep going. I agree. 12 issues. Let's go.
Listen, I won't go on a tangent about how DC, like, just doesn't do anything. They do little things to Supergirl, but they never give her the full mile. They say you get a quarter here, you get 3/4. And it's like, why do you keep doing this to a character that people respond well to? Woman Tomorrow was very well responded to, not only by you and I, but so many other people. It sold well. And DC said, okay, that's enough. And it's like, why? Right. So anyways, but yeah, I think it's a phenomenal story. I think it's her first epic. I hope that we will get more epic stories, because here's the thing. I don't want just one story to be the greatest Supergirl story. I want so many. Just like Superman has many great stories. Batman has many great stories. And there are many that I enjoy. But that's the cool thing about this character is you get many phenomenal epics.
Yeah.
Like, why can't other characters like Supergirl, like Wonder Woman, even other male characters have those? You know what I mean? But another good Supergirl, the Supergirl run I enjoy the most is Supergirl Rebirth. But I will say I am biased because my love for Supergirl started with the CW show, and Rebirth has aspects of the CW show in it. It's not completely the CW show, but it has aspects. So I'm definitely biased. But I think, Steve Orlando did part of that run, and I have those. I've met him. He's lovely. And in particular, I actually bought it today. I was at a comic shop, and I found a single issue of Supergirl, like, 19, that Steve Orlando did or something. And it's a great story. It's a very simple, like, average story in terms of, like, human-wise. But it's so cool because it's, you know, this MB kid's trying to come out, and they're feeling out of sorts, and of course they're getting bullied and things like that, and eventually Supergirl rescues them, and you know, the kid comes out as non-binary to Supergirl, and Supergirl doesn't question it one bit. Supergirl doesn't bat an eye, just goes, yeah, and you just deserve love and all this stuff too. And such a wonderful issue that even having it in trade form, I still wanted it as a single issue, so I bought it. But I love that run as well. So those are kind of my defend of like Supergirl things in a moment are Woman of Tomorrow and Rebirth. If the wordiness, like, Tom King's very wordy.
It is a wordy read, for sure. I will say that. And, like, the way that the girl talks is very, like, it's, like, a weird mix of, like, old English with, like, modern kind of weird.
That's Tom King's writing. Like, love him, hate him, in the middle about Tom King, sometimes one or the other. That's how he writes. He picks characters that are almost like scholarly. He tries to write them very scholarly and how they talk. Of course, he's written characters that haven't, but he writes like that. So if that's a little too much for you, I get it. I still think the series is worth getting through, because I remember the first issue or two, I wasn't completely sold on Woman Tomorrow yet, but it was completely worth it by the time you get to three or four. And eventually I realized why Tom King wrote from that kid's perspective rather than Supergirl's. Because I was like, why would you write a Supergirl story and not from her perspective? I don't understand. And then we get to like issue four or five, you realize, oh my God, this is why. Because there's one issue that is probably my favorite, honestly, in the whole thing in particular, is the all the issue is Supergirl basically trying to stay alive and Ruth trying to keep her alive. But Ruth keeps accounting how amazing Supergirl is, keeping herself alive, essentially, and how she manages to do these things, even though there's no way anywhere she should be able to do that, you know, and just how remarkable it is. And I was like, thank you. Like, this is so cool to actually read somebody that gets how amazing Supergirl is. That's not just me, a fan, like, even though it's a character in a story, it's so cool to actually see that for once. I can't think of a time I've ever gone down a comic with Supergirl. So,
yeah, I mean, I, like you said, I think what really impacted me, and as someone who does not read a lot of DC, and let alone a lot of DC, a lot of Supergirl at that, I just felt like I was reading it and I'm like, oh, this is Supergirl. Like, this is what, like you said, it's like if someone, which seems crazy in my mind, but if someone was like, I have no idea what a Superman or a Supergirl is, I'd be like, here you go, dude. Like, this is the book for you. Cause, like, I mean, there's just that issue that you mentioned where it's like going through all of her feats. The one that really stuck with me, and again, that I was like, oh, this is Supergirl right here, was I forget exactly the context of what's going on, but there's like an alien guy digging all these graves for like these people, and she comes by and she's like, well, like, you know, what are you doing? And he's like, oh, like, my entire family basically was killed, and like, I'm digging all these graves for all like the people of this village or whatever. And she like just used her super speed and like digs all the graves and stuff, and I'm like, I don't know, it just like that moment was just so great. And it just was one of the, I'm sure everyone out there who reads comics, I know that you've experienced this, but you read a panel and you're just like, oof, like, oh
yeah,
you can like physically feel it hit you. And I was just like, God damn, this is good. And like I said, I think it, like you said, it just exemplifies the character of Supergirl so well. And as someone who isn't an expert on her character or like reads a lot of her, I was just, like I said, blown away with how great that is. And I think it really didn't go too deep into it, but it at least reminded me of the reason I love Supergirl. And I think that something that a lot of people don't think about is I think Supergirl is interesting almost for the opposite reason that Superman is interesting. And so to me, Superman is interesting because he's an alien who's like an American, right? Like, it's like, yes, he is from Krypton, but dude's a farm boy, like through and through. Mm-hmm. He's a Kansas farm boy. Like, he's more human than a lot of people are. And I think that's like kind of what his thing is. But Kara, on the other hand, she grew up on Krypton and she's full on Kryptonian.
Yeah. I mean, and that's the thing too. You know, I try to be careful, you know, differentiating Supergirl and Superman, because I don't want people to think I'm opposing them to each other. But there are differences, and you can't win. I was actually talking with my siblings about this one day. I was like, I can't win if I talk about Supergirl and Superman, because if I say they're different, then people are like, but they're both supers and they have the same powers, why do you care? But then if I say they're not different, then people start telling me how they are different, and I can't win. It's just this never-ending circle. But I completely agree with you. Like, that's why I think Supergirl should be the leader of the House of El. She should be in charge, not Clark. Yeah. But again, do we know Superman's you know, other name by Clark or Kal-El the best? Clark. Kara's Kara's Zor-El. Like, and that's okay. That's normal. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. And I've always said, you know, for a couple years not least, Superman is Earth's hero, but Kara is the galaxy and the universe's hero. Ooh, and that's what I really love about her, is that, kind of like you said, you know, yes, she can help us humans on here, and she does, and she is very human in her own right. She has all these great emotions and things like we do, but she can go to any other planet and she can still have empathy for them, and she can still say, let me help you. And not that Clark can't do that as well, but he will always have the most empathy for Earth by default. And while Kara, in a lot of cases, because she ends up living on Earth as well, may end up having some more bias too, I think at the end of the day, hope is hope to her, right? And while I know Superman, or at least Superman John's phrase changed, Superman Clark's is still Truth, Justice, and the American Way, or whatever they change it to. But Kara's is Hope, Help, and Compassion for All. And I really personally love that because, especially for her, because Clark, sometimes I feel like he's almost, he doesn't get angry. He's such a great person and a great character that even when he gets angry, he doesn't let it affect him very often. You know what I mean? Like, of course, there are times Superman gets angry a little bit, but Supergirl, she's always angry. She's always frustrated. And I think, you know, one, I don't always like that trope with her because it's the angry woman trope, which is annoying. But on the other hand, it's cool to have that representation in terms of I'm angry almost every day existing as a woman. I can only imagine being a woman or an MB, person of color, like putting more, even more labels than even I have together, right? I mean, the amount of fury we live with every day. And so I feel like it's very identifiable with Kara that she knows she's angry often. And as she's evolved as a character over the years, we get to see her instead of just being the angry woman trope and Superman Clark has to calm her down and say, don't do that. But it's evolved into, she says, okay, let me figure out what I can do with my anger. And we actually see that a bit in Woman of Tomorrow in that last issue. We get to finally see that final showdown and she's angry as shit. And she ends up figuring out something else to do with her anger. It's not that she's no longer angry. And it's not that she never was angry. And so with Clark, I feel like we don't get that same message there, which is fine. That message is needed in his character often. Kara represents that. And I think that's what a lot of people resonate with and don't realize it too, is a lot of us, since we're angry right now, we're frustrated, life is hard, a lot of these very real life things that I don't want to bring up because they suck, they're angering a lot of people, like they're hurting a lot of people. So what do we do with that hurt? Well, characters like Kara can help remind us what to do with that. And like, I even had this panel that I printed out here next to me. It's from Immortal X-Men number 8. It's Nightcrawler, and he's obviously one of my other loves, if you guys don't know. But there's a quote that I printed out, and I think it's so important. He goes, sometimes good people have to get angry. Sometimes good people forget that. And so even Kara and Kurt are incredibly different characters, but I love that commonality between them two, is when they both realize, crud, we're angry, and crap, we have to do something with it, and we got to find something helpful and effective to do with it. And so I think Kara really represents a lot of us as people now, more than Clark does. But Clark is still who we want to be, too. We want to be able to not be angry. We want to be able to just be happy-go-lucky a lot of the time. And when things get frustrating, we just push it away. But it's not realistic right now.
I think you said it perfectly. It's like Clark, Superman, that's who we strive to be. But it seems Supergirl represents more of like who we actually are.
Yeah, I mean, I think Superman in a lot of ways is the ideal. And I think Supergirl is kind of the reality of, hey, this is real hope. I think Superman gives us that, oh my gosh, you know, that almost like kind of kid hope, you know, or you wake up on Christmas and you hope everything's okay. And even if everything in your family is terrible, maybe one day on Christmas or some holiday or whatever, like your family all for one day can behave and you all can be on the same page. The day after that, I may not, but you got that one day. I feel like Superman's like that one perfect day you don't always get or often get, you know. And but again, like, not to say that like Supergirl is can't be those things too. I mean, that's one thing that carried over to her rebirth from the CW show that I really love about that version of her character is you know, she's a dork, she likes potsickers, she eats with her hands, like she doesn't want to use a fork, why would she, like she, you know, she's just, she's very cutesy and dorky too. And yet she has this other strong persona. So again, that's another, that's actually a similarity to Clark. And I think what makes them more real for both, for all of us as well, you know, whoever you feel you can more closely relate to or want to be or whatever. But I think a lot of us want to be Kara too. Like, yeah, Superman might be the quote ideal, but you know, what if you could have all his powers and still have your emotions and still find a way to do something with them? And not that Clark doesn't have emotions. It's just different. So I think it depends on who person you are. Like some people, they may be, their personalities may align more with that, with suits. But yeah, I think she's fantastic. I think there's a reason people respond well to her. There's a reason she sells. Like I'm so upset because Wesqueer tagged me and said, look, Lauren, the McFarlane toy Supergirl Target exclusive is on sale for pre-order. I said, awesome. I look and it's sold out pre-order already.
Oof.
So you know what I did? I tweeted at DC and I said, okay, she sold out. Tell me again that she doesn't sell. I'm getting tired, guys. Mm. Like, it's very interesting. People respond incredibly well to her. But DC's like, no, we're good. I don't get it. But they still do little things here and there, so I also don't get that.
Yeah. I mean, we actually, we just had a task on the show, and we kind of talked about something very similar of at least what he was saying, and I think I tend to agree, is that's kind of sometimes what leans me more towards Marvel, is I feel like while Marvel has its own problems, I'm not going to say, you know, they're perfect either, but it feels like Marvel's a lot more willing to put women or people of color in the front. Like, you look at the X-Men or, you know, Captain Marvel and stuff, like, she's had so many great runs. Like you said, it seems like for whatever reason over at DC, they're still kind of hesitant on that front. And like with the Supergirl book, for like you just said, Tom King wanted to do 12. Why would you not do 12 issue? Like, it's just like, it makes no sense to me. So like I said, I don't know. It just seems like sometimes that kind of feels like a reason why I kind of lean towards Marvel. It seems they're more willing to take that chance. And like I said, put the women characters up front. But like I said, that's not to say that they don't have their own problems either.
Oh yeah, everybody has problems. That's the thing. Like all the arguments between which one's better, Marvel or DC. It's just whatever you like at the end of the day. Like, I'm more of a Marvel girl myself, but at this point, like, I'm not reading that many comics. And what I do, if I like it, I keep it. If I don't, or it doesn't hit my vibe because whatever's going on in my head, then I'm just like, it's not for me, and I move on. But like lately, I just read great characters and great stories. That's what I want. So like, I even stopped following a lot of like writers and creators, you know, in terms of Marvel and DC, at least, not indies, that's different, but from Marvel and DC, because once somebody gets so big, I don't like all the stuff they write anymore, because they're writing so much and not all of it is the same quality they wrote when they were doing two or three series. When they're writing six plus series at a time, cough cough, Tom Taylor, no offense, love the man, But the quality can't be the same at that point. Not all those things are going to be the best Tom Taylor writing, or even close. And it's great he's writing all those things, and other creators that write that much, like Colin Bunn. Fantastic, you're writing so much. I'm very happy for their success.
The Bunpocalypse, baby.
Huh?
I said the Bunpocalypse, baby.
Yeah, like, that's fantastic. No harm, no foul. That's great. And I'm not going to read everything Colin Bunn, even if I like one or 10 things the guy writes, because he just has so much stuff coming out. They're not all gonna be the same quality. So I follow what I enjoy in characters. So for example, on the opposite way, I was reading a more X-Men, I think 15, and I got it this week, and I think it came out last week, but I got it this week, and I was planning on dropping that series because the X-Men stuff in Krakoa, I'm done with it. Like, they've dragged it on too long.
Okay,
they should have let Hickman end it with Inferno, even though I said it's okay to let it go. Nope, I was wrong.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question, is about X-Men. Yep. So we'll get into the X-Men stuff.
Yep, Hickman should have ended it, but I've dropped every RX book, which I, except on King of Spider-Man, because it's Kurt, and I did enjoy issue one. Spurrier's still on my hit list, though, on my watch list, more like, watching Spurrier's Tale. Oh. This is his third series writing Kurt, so I just, listen, he messes this up, there's no hope for him. He gets a third try, he's lucky. But, anyways, but I enjoyed that, so I got that going, and then I still have more X-Men. So, I read issue 15, I was like, alright, let's see if I still want to get rid of it. I'm still playing on it, but I'm gonna give it a try anyway. And I'm upset, because Son of a Biscuit, Kieran Gillen, is still a good writer. I'm like, I'm done with this Krakoa stuff, but I still enjoyed reading this. Dang it. So his, now that's staying on my pull list, because if I enjoy it, why get rid of it?
Yeah. His Eternals was phenomenal, if you haven't read
that. I heard, yeah.
Yeah, that is super good.
And I mean, he wrote, like, the best Kurt I've read in decades. He wrote Immortal X-Men 8 with Kurt leading, and from his perspective. I'm like, can we get Kieran Gillen to write Kurt next? Like, I swear to God, like...
So that leads perfectly. Like I said, I want to talk about X-Men. So this is kind of like a running joke that we've had for a long time. Because how long has it been now? I mean, probably since we started becoming friends, how I've been saying that I'm catching up on my X-Men books.
But yeah, you never actually catch up. No. I have multiple people that say the same thing. They're always a couple months or a year
I will
behind.
Say, like, I will yeah. say, in my defense, I made it through, I think, Marauders is... Nice. So I'm... Gorgon would say a lore whore. That's what he likes to call it. So he's one too. Uh-huh. But I love like the lore stuff, right? So like when I start something, I want everything. So I didn't just right. like, I wasn't like, oh, because I read House and Power when they came out. So I was on yeah. the ground floor and then, you know, just got away from me. But I was like, if I'm going to do this, I want to read every, like, I'm not a picky choosy type of guy. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to read it all. And like I said, I think I got like through Marauder. So that I think that was what Sword of X was in there. I read. I don't know. Like I said, there's so many freaking X books. That's exactly what I want to get into is. So there's so many X books. The Krakoa Age has been going on for what? 2-3 years now. Started in 2019. Well, 2018.
It's been going
maybe?
On like 4 years. 4 years.
Yeah. And so. You are a major. I'm a big X fan, but like I said, I've been so behind. And I've been trying to catch up, but I want your perspective as an X fan, someone who's been following the Hickman era, the Krakoa era, all that. So I saw a tweet maybe a couple weeks ago now, and I'm not going to call out the shop who it was, but they made a tweet saying how the X Men books are like dropping, like. Skyrocketing yeah. downwards and talking about how like all these people are dropping X-Men from their pull list and this, that, and the other. And from my perspective, from the outside looking in, so like we talked about, you know, I do the comic reviews, I obviously do this podcast, so like I'm pretty active in the community, if you would say. And it seems like to me, from the outside looking in, everyone was loving the Hickman era and everyone's been loving the, like, all I've seen is people being like, yeah, this was awesome or this was awesome. So I'm curious for you, obviously you don't speak for everyone, but in your opinion, where did that start to fall off? And not only where did it start to fall off for you, but we just got the announcement of what is it, Fall and Rise of X? Yeah. So, and that's being talked about as it's going to be the end of the Hickman era now. So again, what is your thoughts on the state of the X-Men right now in this whole Krakoa era? And what do you think is going to be on the tail end of this quote unquote end?
So I'm going to be nitpicky and differentiate between the Hickman era versus the Krakoa era as a whole.
Oh, okay.
The Krakoa
please.
Era.
Yes, please. Correct
when
me.
Obviously, House of X powers of 10, right? That's when it started. And if the Fall of X, Rise of X end, that will be the end of the Krakoa era if they do like they're selling it, right? Who mm-hmm. knows? A lot of us are thinking they're not actually going to do it. So we'll see. The Hickman era ended with Inferno. So Inferno was actually originally intended to be the end of the Krakoan era. It was supposed to end it. And if you read Inferno, which was a pretty good, it was a good 4-issue event, you'll realize in the fourth issue, there's a specific point where you can tell where Hickman changed the ending because the X office and the editors wanted to continue Krakoa. You can tell he changed it. And I was actually talking about this yesterday with my sibling. I was like, I would pay to have them release the Hickman cut of Inferno and we get to see the original ending after they're done with the Krakoan era, because so I think not immediately after Inferno, but I think at some point after Inferno, that's when the Krakoa era started dying. That's when a lot of us fans were done, because from my perspective at least, the Krakoan era doesn't work without having somebody having a vision. It's kind of like how the prequels in Star Wars are already messy, but they work because at least George Lucas, for all his faults, still had one story to tell. From beginning to end of episode 1 through 3, he had a complete story to tell, and he did tell it. Mm-hmm. So that helps make those prequels work for all their other flaws. The Krakoa Age works when you have someone, for example, like Hickman, who was the original architect of the era, saying, this is where we are. We have all this stuff in the middle, but this is what we have to get to, which was Inferno mm-hmm. for him at the time. But after Inferno, when he changed the ending so they could continue it and he stepped away and it's no longer his era, right? It's just Krakoa continuing with other people. There's no one there with a overall plot, to my understanding at least, or to us general people. We don't have anybody to say we know there's a George Lucas or Hickman behind the scenes doing this. It's literally just different writers doing what they want. And so instead of having all these different books that, yes, you have all these books that have their own stories, but they connect under some general theme or story, there's no connection anymore. And any connections feel forced. Like, I love the original Marauders run of Jerry Duggan wrote. But then the new Marauders run with Steve Orlando, who again I mentioned I loved his Supergirl run. I didn't care for his Marauders that much, so I dropped it. It wasn't anything personal. It was just it's not working for me. I don't get it. So I think that's why it's falling the most. I think there's a lot of reasons people are gonna say they don't like it now and things like that. But I think that's what's killing it, is because we don't know what story they're telling anymore. What's the story of the Krakoan era anymore? Before it was about Moira. Then it was about Mystique and Destiny. Now it's about this. Now it's about that. Oh, wait, but they're still here too. So let's bring them back in. It's like, what are you doing? Like, even Judgment Day was disappointing in that way, with the X-Men side of it, at least. You know, with the Jean Grey Phoenix thing at the end of that, we thought that could be a big deal in the Resurrection. Now it doesn't matter because, anyways, I can't say spoilers, I guess, because you're still behind. But, like,
oh, no, listen, please. You could, I'll throw a spoiler alert up here. You can go into spoilers.
But yeah, Krakoa is basically gone and everybody is stranded. Charles thinks he killed them all. It's just like, what have you done? Like, why is it that the only thing we know what to do with mutants when we're out of ideas is to kill them or think they're dead or take away their powers or whatever? Like, why are we doing this? And so it's just so frustrating. Now, the reason Immortal X-Men still worked for me, even though I'm furious with this era and pretty much done with it, is because the characterization Kieran Gillen did with some of the characters was so enjoyable. Specifically, Celine was hilarious in that issue. So good for her. But yeah, I'm done with the Krakoan era, because it's like when you have something really good and you're like, okay, let's keep doing it. It's like the show Supernatural. I didn't watch it. It was supposed to end with this season.
Yes,
the creator. The creator wanted to end with season 5. They said, no, keep it going. The creator left. Then the show goes on 15 seasons and even by the end, people that still watch the show are like, yeah, this isn't a good show, but I have to watch it. And it's like, end it.
Yeah, that ending they had for season 5 was perfect. Like, it was literally, that was the perfect ending. And that's so funny you bring that up, because as you were talking about that, I was thinking Supernatural. Because I was such a huge fan of that show. Not to go on a tangent, but I have to talk about it since you brought it up.
Was
such a huge fan of that show. Like, I'm talking like I'm looking up 67 Impalas for sale in my area, obsessed with that show. And yeah, after season 5, man, I mean, I stuck with it for a little bit, but it just totally went off the rails. And like I said, it was just so frustrating, because it was, in my opinion, that was a perfect ending. Like, if they just ended it there and never had another episode, I would have been completely fine with that. So it's so interesting to hear that that's how you're feeling with the X-Men books, because like you correctly reminded me, but I knew that Hickman left after Inferno, but I was under the impression that he was still kind of, you know, hand in the background, kind of blueprinting things out. I wasn't aware that he just like completely was like, see ya.
No, he left the X office entirely.
See, I thought he was still kind of coordinating things.
He's doing that New Gods book that's coming out. Like, not necessarily New Gods, but some book having to do with gods in the titles coming out. Then he's also doing that Ultimate
Invasion,
I guess. Like, so I don't think he's had a hand to X office since he left. I really do think he was like, cool, have fun, I'm out. Because, again, that was his story. It was up to Inferno. And I swear to God, at the end of Inferno, Mystique and Destiny were supposed to burn down Krakoa or something. But he changed the ending so that didn't happen, because the X-Office wanted to riot. And at the time, I as a fan was like, maybe some more Krakoa weren't hurt. Now I'm like, dang it, I wish they would have ended it.
Please end it. Kill it.
Well, because I'd rather like go out on good note and say, man, it would have been nice if we had longer, but at least we had it. And it ended on this really cool note. But now I'm like, you guys ruined it. Like,
yeah. And I hate when, like I said, I hate when that happens, when it's, don't get me wrong, for most things, I'm a pretty easy critic. Everyone knows that. And it's like, hell, you want to give me 50 issues? give it to me, you know, no, I'll eat it up. But, right. you know, from a story standpoint, though, there are some things that it's like, okay, this needs to end. Like, while it's like, yeah, it would be great to get more, like, from a story perspective, this is where this needs to stop. And I think that right. with a lot of things, especially X-Men, it's very easy to forget that and just like, yeah, keep it going. And we throw yep. this book out there, and then Wolverine comes, and then Nightcrawler, and then blah, blah, blah. And they're on Mars and like all this crazy shit. So like I said, that's just yeah. very interesting from being on the outside. Like I said, knowing that. So it's not just me who's confused. People who are nope. reading the book are even confused.
Yeah, we've been confused. I mean, that's. Yeah. I think that's where, honestly, a lot of the frustration isn't just frustration. It's coming from, why is this happening? Why are you doing it like this? I mean, mm-hmm. Hellions, which is in the original, you know, Hickman era, mm-hmm. it's one of my favorite series ever. I mean, I was so shocked how much I love this series. It was so funny. It mm-hmm. would have me crying, laughing, and then two pages later, I'd be crying in actual sadness. And it would do that almost every issue. It was so, I mean, Zeb Wells did phenomenal with that, which is why it was so surprising. Again, this is why you got to be careful what careers you follow, and you got to read a bunch of their stuff before you start worshiping a creator, because then he goes to write Spider-Man, and people had words about that that I don't know anything Ooh. About, other than they had words, because I'm not a Spider-Man person.
A but lot like, of words, I'll tell you what.
Yeah, and it's like, just because somebody is good at writing something else doesn't mean they'll be good at writing something else. Does that make mm-hmm. sense? Like,
oh, absolutely.
Just because he was great writing Hellions, which again, he was phenomenal that run. He was a genius there. Doesn't mm-hmm. mean he's great writing Spider-Man, and I think that's why too, like, this kind of a little off topic, but that's one thing that kind of stinks in terms of seeing comic creators get bigger and bigger, is they get more projects, which is great. They get to write bigger characters, which is great. And sometimes that means they take on characters that they think they have a great idea for, and then fans read them and we're like, so you were trying to do something, but like,
I don't know what it was.
Well, that's like Cy Spurrier with Nightcrawler. I read some of his interviews. I've heard some of them. He really thinks he knows. He really thinks and believes he is writing Kurt as authentically and genuinely and well as he possibly can. And I'm sitting here like, so we just have two different understandings of the character then.
Yeah.
Because Kurt is not a religious zealot. He's just mm-hmm. not. Okay, religion is a part of who he is. He's not a zealot. That needs to go. Mm-hmm. So that's why I'm enjoying Uncanny Spider-Man number one. Is because there's less of that. There's still a little bit that he's throwing in there, Spurrier, that's annoying, but they're throwing back in Kurt's flirtiness, his swashbuckling, being a pirate, sword. They're throwing that stuff back in. I'm like, thank you.
Yeah, and I mean, like you said, there's just so much X-Books coming out. It's like you said, everyone is confused. And I think that's like, for the people in the Marvel office, it's like, okay, that's how you should know that shit's not going well. If you're, you know, people who aren't reading and are reading are confused. Because I mean, that's one of the reasons why I've been so slow to catch up, is because I'm just like, there is just so much going on. It's like, it's daunting, honestly. And I mean, and not only is it daunting, but I have been picking up Immortal X-Men and X-Men Red since they started. I have every single issue, and I think I've read maybe two of them. So like I said, it's so sad to hear that that's where it's going. But do you think, so now, like we talked about, we have Fall and Rise of X, which, you know, I guess in your opinion, hopefully will bring an end to the Krakoa era. Mm-hmm. What do you think is the way forward after this Krakoa?
I got no idea. I wish I could. Like, seriously, I wish I could be like, let me tell these writers to do this, especially since I have all these opinions. But like,
not necessarily like a story, but I mean, I guess I more so mean, do you think that it can come back from the Krakoa? Like you said,
people
right now are very kind of sick of this and kind of a little frustrated. Do you think that they can flip the script for this next, like, do you think they'll actually finish it? And like I said, flip the script?
I mean, I don't know how quickly they'll do it, but I mean, we came back from the decimation years. That's why the Krakoa era was so exciting at first, because I remember being told I should read House of X Powers at a 10, and I looked it up on Wikipedia, and I was like, this is batshit crazy. Why would you do this? I can't read this. And my friends and my sibling were like, trust me, read it. And I read it and it blew my mind. I mean, I was mind blown. I was like, I never thought this could work. But mm-hmm. this one change, you know, making, you know, Moira a mutant and everything. I mean, it changed everything. And it was crazy. It's batshit crazy. It shouldn't have worked, but did. And it brought so much life back into the X-Books that hadn't been there in years. And that's why it's so hard watching this era kind of fall in such a way. Not on a good note, I guess. In terms of will the X-Books come back, they always do. It may take 10 years, but they'll come back. Like,
oh yeah, they're not going nowhere.
The X-Men are the biggest, they are the biggest and most important team and all that in Marvel. Like, why do you think Marvel did X-Men films first with Fox? Like,
yeah. Oh, they're
the biggest. And the Fantastic Four, like, those are the flagships. The X-Men, Fantastic Four, and Spider-Man are the flagships of Marvel.
You can love all these other great Marvel characters.
Yeah, but they're the Marvel Trinity. Ha, got them. I coined it, guys. But yeah, like that's the trendy. The Avengers aren't in there. Like Daredevil's not in there. I love Daredevil, but sorry, man, he's not in it. It's those three. And so they'll come back. I have no idea what they'll do. I don't really know where you go from here other than they need to find another great storyteller that has a new story for the X-Men to come in. Even if that's taking the X-Men back to basics, but telling it in a great story. We need a storyteller back. That's what the X office needs. A storyteller to come through, clean things up, get it back to basics if necessary, and then go from there. That's what we need.
And who, if you had a dream writer to come in and fill that role, who would you want that to be?
I don't know. I don't really have a dream one because I think it's somebody I don't know. Because again, like I really feel like a lot of these careers that we know, they've written for X-Men before or told a story with the X-Men. So why am I going to have them come back with this grand story? You know, Hickman came with this grand story for the X-Men and said, I'm ready to write X-Men now. Here's my tale. Here's my pitch. And they apparently said yes. And so, I think it's somebody I don't know yet. It needs somebody that has a bigger vision than just, let me write a few arcs or let me write a really good run. It's somebody that creates essentially a universe because that's what Hickman really did. And that's what he does with all these stories. He does the Ultimate Universe, for example, his Fantastic Four stuff. Like he creates universes for these characters. He takes a Marvel universe and says, I'm going to Hickman it. And then he does it incredibly well most of the time. So we need somebody to come through and say, I've got the story. Let's do this. Back to basics, I mean, I don't know. I'd like to see Kelly Thompson write the X-Men more. She wrote them a little bit when they were in the Captain Marvel issues for the Brood. I enjoy her with characterizations. I think more than anything, we need a really good storyteller, a visionary overall. And then we need people to write characters well. Stop trying in all these single issues to do all these random plots we don't care about. I don't care, all right? Give me good characterizations and a simple but enjoyable plot. And then as you continue forward, whoever's the storyteller and stuff, you can work in that big picture story. I think that's what it needs. I don't know who should do it, but I think it's someone I don't know and probably somebody Marvel doesn't know yet.
I would say, I love that answer, though. Like you said, someone who I don't know yet. Because, I mean, that's where the best stuff comes from. You know, everyone has their breakout thing, you know? I mean, a friend of the show that we've had on a couple times, David Popose, like, you know, he had Savage Avengers and, you know, it broke out for him. And now he's writing all these other crazy books. And like you said, I think you said it perfectly. The way forward is someone who is yet to, who we don't know yet. So, I mean, hey, if you're listening or watching this out there, you got an X-Men pitch, go email Marvel because, like I said, we need some fresh blood in there.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, why do we do auditions for movies or TV shows? Because there's somebody out there for the role that you don't know yet and you need to find them. I think that's what Marvel needs to do right now. I don't think they need to go through their current X office and grab somebody out there. No offense to anybody that's written X-Men at all recently. Like, there's been a ton of great stuff and a lot of writers I enjoy there. But go and find your person. Find the person, or if it's a team that does that, I don't care. But find the storytellers that you need and come back to us as fans and say, here you go, X fans. We know you're disappointed by how we dragged on this Krakoa era. Here you go. We got a new great story that we think, even if it's not as revolutionary as, you know, House of X Powers of 10 might have been, this is still going to be refreshing for you. That's all I want. Something refreshing and enjoyable.
Mm-hmm. Well, fingers crossed. I think we'll get it, though. I think we'll get it. Like you said, the X-Men, they are not going nowhere. For, you know, no. Like you said, the people who are new out here and don't know, like, they, X-Men is the shit. Like, they've been the mm-hmm. shit. Like you said, I mean, when I was a kid, before there was an MCU and all this crazy stuff, like, you hit it on the head. X-Men, Fantastic Four, and Spider-Man. That was the flagships, like Cap, Iron Man, B-listers, maybe even C-listers, if we're being real honest with
Iron Man
other.
Was a D-lister in the comics. I'll say Iron Man came through.
Yeah,
I'll
say you could even put him on a D-list. So it's like, yeah. I mean, they're not going nowhere, and I have faith that they'll find the right person. But I think it's, you know, I've said this before, and I feel very strongly about this, is creators have different strengths, right? Some people are very good at writing team books. Some people are very good at writing single character driven stories. And I think they just need to find that person that fits in what they want this new X-Men to be. And that was Hickman, and that was perfect. But they had to beat the dead horse till they just could not anymore.
Yeah, and to be fair, like, I don't think it's completely Marvel's fault, because at the time there were still a lot of fans, including myself, that were like, hey, you can continue this. Go ahead.
Yeah.
So sometimes I think it's important we as fans realize, yeah, we kind of fucked up. We kind of spoke out of turn. Damn. Yeah. We kind of shot ourselves in the foot. Like, of course, Marvel listened. They're like, mm-hmm. you'll pay money? Here you go. Like, and we were all like, yeah. And now we're like, why'd you listen to us? Well, it's our fault. So
yeah, we're just stupid fans. What the hell do we know?
Yeah, we're like, why would you listen to us?
Yeah, literally.
Like, what?
Yeah, I think that comes down to like a lot of fandom, honestly, is like, we'll be like, oh, we want this. They're like, okay, here you go. They're like, no, not like that.
And we're like, never mind. Yeah. Nope, you're wrong. What are you thinking?
Well, so we talked about a lot of stuff already, and I mean, usually we start off with this question, but I mean, you know, who cares? We'll throw it in at the end. I'm curious. So we've talked about a lot of books here, Supergirl, X-Men, some of the other stuff that you're really passionate about. So we usually ask people about like their kind of comic origin story, right? And I mean, I don't need you to go through your whole, you know, oh, this, that. What I'm really interested in, like I said, since we've already been going for a little while here, I don't want to keep you. I could keep you all day, but I won't do that to you. So I'm curious, do you remember, like, if it was Supergirl maybe, or X-Men, like the book or the character that really was like, oh, this opened my eyes, you know, like, oh, this is, you know, that really hooked you and like kind of snowballed all this stuff with comic books and all that?
Well, I don't remember the first comic I ever read or held, to be honest. I don't remember the exact first one, but the first one I can think of that, like, I still have it. It's a hardcover color reprint of a couple issues of X-Men, including the Dark Phoenix Saga and Days of Future Past. And it was given to me on my 7th birthday by my parents. They signed it as such. So I had read stuff before that, but I finally had my own copy, I guess. And it was in color. That was the coolest thing. When I was a kid, I still have these as well. I would read these like bulk black and white reprints of old X-Men issues. And so when I was a kid, before I got that, I had thought all the old X-Men stuff was in black and white. I'd never seen these characters in color, except maybe in video games, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like Marvel Ultimate Alliance and X-Men Legends were huge on influencing me to also want to read the comics as well. Mm-hmm. And so when I got that and I looked, I said, oh my God, they're in color. I was like, freaking mind blown. I was like, what? Like
Dorothy getting to Oz.
Yeah, like Wolverine has a yellow and blue costume. Like, what? Like, it was just so mind-blowing and so cool. And so it's very cliche, but probably the Dark Phoenix Saga of X-Men, that was one of the first runs I remember reading and just being like, oh my God, that was just insane. And to this day, it's still like one of the greatest comic runs you can ever read. Like,
It's a classic for a reason. There's a reason why it's on everyone's top, you know, 10 list or top 5 list. But yeah. You also mentioned, though, that you kind of got back into comics around 2019. So yes. I'm curious. I find that happens a lot to a lot of people. Either they grow up with comics and then like rediscover them later in life, or just, you know, discover them later. They didn't grow up with them. So I'm curious, was there a kind of specific thing that got you? I mean, I'm sure it was just, you know, growing up and doing other things, but was there anything that like turned you off to comic books, and then vice versa, was there something that really brought you back in, or did it just kind of organically happen that way?
Well, there's nothing specific to turn me off. It was just kind of life. I mean, I read comics through like elementary school, then middle school was middle school. Like, it sucked. Like, our emotions all a mess. I'm blasting 3 days Grace and Evanescence in my room. Like, I have the world on my shoulders or something, you know? So, I mean, and then my uncle Rich, who I credit a lot for getting me into comics, which he pretty much did, he moved to New Hampshire with my aunt for like her master's degree or something. And he used to live in my neighborhood as a kid. And then even when we moved first, he still lived in the area we live in, like 20 minutes away. But he's in New Hampshire. He's like multiple states away from me. So that turned me off from comics as well. I didn't have my uncle showing me his big stack every single week of comics and talking to me all the time about them. So, yeah, life just got busy. And in high school, I had a lot more friends that played video games and stuff. And that's like when Minecraft came out and everybody thought Minecraft was the best thing since bread, apparently. And I was like, everybody's pixelated. What? Clearly, I still don't get it. But that's okay. It's fine. Minecraft's not for me. But like, so, yeah, I definitely got away from it. I played soccer. Middle school and high school. So I was focused on that. I was focused on just high school. I was focused on coming out. I came out as bi in high school, like all these other things that like comics just weren't at the front of my mind. But around like 2018 or so, maybe early 2019, WizardCon came here. It's the only time that I know of WizardCon came to Raleigh, North Carolina. And so I kind of was interested. I was like, hey, this looks cool. And I asked my dad if he wanted to go. He said yes. We had never been to a convention like this before, ever. So we went, and that event really opened the doors up for both me and my father, because my father, for the first time in his life, spent a shit ton of money on only himself. He bought over $500 worth of fan art that he has framed in this house now. He has so much, and he hasn't stopped. And now he buys comics all the time. I mean, he has more comics than I do, probably. But to be fair, he doesn't read them. He buys a comic, looks at it, says it's pretty, and decides to either frame it or put it in a box.
I love that. I absolutely love that, though.
Yeah, but he loves it. And that's the thing. There's no right way to collect. So, but anyways, and so after that, again, that event was so fun. And for whatever reason, I decided to go. I don't remember how I first went to a shop I go to now, but I went to their shop and I put two runs in my box. I put the original Marauders run, that Hickman, from Hickman's Aaron, Jerry Duggan wrote, and I put Captain Marvel in my box. And those are the first two runs I started getting.
Wow.
And reading. And so that's why it was like very bittersweet on a whole other level for me personally. Not only when the first Marauders ended, but specifically when Kelly Thompson's Captain Marvel ended, because I was like, this is the only other series I have left from when I first started getting back into comics, and it's going to be done now. But I put them in my box and I never took them out. Like, Kelly Thompson's Captain Marvel, once it was in my box, I never took it out, never even thought to take it out. Like, I never had any, you know, even if an issue wasn't as good as another or whatever, I never thought to take it out, because the next issue was always back at the top peak again, you know, with how she wrote. But yeah, so I mean, going to that convention was huge. And I think that's why too, like, conventions are so important, because you never know if that's going to be the first time somebody picks up a comic for the first time, or they buy fan art. And the next thing you know, they're my father buying cool comics. And like, to be fair, my father is pretty cool though in the comic way, because his favorite is Fantastic Four, and he has all the issues of the original Fantastic Four run, except guess which ones? Of course, the most expensive, numbers 1 through 5. That's it.
What? That's one, crazy.
But he has all other 300 something guest shoes. He's very proud of them, as he should be.
Wow,
So
that's awesome. We need to get him on the show. I want to see this.
I know, yeah. I mean, he's got the long boxes, and like the funny thing is those long box, like he still has the old long boxes he had for decades with those. And I'm like, those are kind of gross, but they're also kind of cool because you can see just how faded the coloring is on them. But yeah, so yeah, it was definitely the convention, and definitely also being able to share that with my dad. And then we were able to get Skylar, one of my siblings, into comics. They're more of a DC person now. And then we also got my brother Caleb into it. And then Tristan is good to shop with us normally, but he's read some stuff too, like I did as a kid. And then we even got my mom, who's never read a comic in her life before she started. She said, "You guys are going? Okay, I'll go." And now she gets comics. So it's really cool that it got to be a family thing, because you don't get that so often. But yeah, so I think that was really cool, just having that con to go to, and then having the whole family kind of get into it on their own time.
Yeah, that's super, super cool. I mean, I love that story so much. I mean, it's like that's what comics are about, right? Bringing people together, whether that's strangers on the internet or your own family members. I mean, that's what I personally love about this medium, and I know that's something that you love about this medium too. And I mean, I just love that story. That's such a great story. I want to ask you too, we talked about this a little bit, and you know, before we wrap up here, I know you're kind of going through a little, like we talked about burnout recently, and you know, haven't had time to really, you know, dive into books like you used to. But I am curious, what are you reading these days? Are you reading anything these days? And if so, what's something that, you know, is really kind of inspiring you right now, or that you're really kind of gravitating to? Like we already talked about your feelings on the X Office. So is there like something else that is coming out that maybe, you know, is really piquing your interest right now?
Queen of Swords from Vault. It's like a barbaric spinoff, if you guys have read Barbaric. It's really good. I actually forgot to get issue 3 when I was last in my shop, and I'm mad at myself. I have to go back and get it because it wasn't my pull, apparently. But I really like that series. Months ago, I reviewed the first issue of it when I was still doing stuff. I really like Poison Ivy still. Issue 14 is the latest one. That series has just continued to be great, even if there's again an issue that's slower than another. It's just very well written, great characterization. Birds of Prey, Kelly Thompson's writing. I know a lot of people have feelings about that because they're like, why is this character not here? Or why is this one here? Like, it was very well written, which I was not surprised by, because again, it's about characterization with Thompson as a writer, and she did it justice. So I really enjoyed that. Those are probably my top few. I mean, there's a couple other things I read. I've been reading Avengers. I don't really remember the last issue, to be honest, but I'll be getting the issue after that. I read Rare Flavors number 1, from Ron V and Felipe Andrade, who did The Many Deaths of Layla Starr. So of course I had to get this one. It was
We
really,
love
really good.
Ram over here. We love Ram, so I'm sure if it's him, it's probably good.
I mean, again, he's gone so big now. There's a couple things that like aren't my favorite from him, but again, like to me, that doesn't say anything about him as a writer other than you're human. Like, but no, it was fantastic. And honestly, yeah, I really enjoy, like, if you guys like, if anybody is like, I don't care for his writing, at least look up one of his interviews, because the way he speaks and talks about his work is really fascinating.
Yeah, like I said, we love Ram over here. Obviously, Gorgon being the Venom guy, he, you know, is obsessed with Ram. So, I mean, like you said, though, I mean, not everyone can be perfect all the time. And I think that's, you know, not to get into a long tangent about this, but we did bring this up a little bit in the interview previously, is, you know, people being toxic and kind of very strongly worded opinions. It's like, you know, everyone's just trying to do their best. You get what I mean? And it's like no one is gonna always come out with the best thing ever. You know, I mean, I don't want to call anyone out specifically, but you know what I mean. Like I said, it's like there's hits and misses even with the best of writers. And it's like just because that isn't your flavor or your favorite, that doesn't make them a bad writer. It just means that you don't like this particular book.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'll even go and give an example, because I've mentioned multiple times, and I feel bad because, again, I'm with you. Like, these creators are humans. Like, Cy Spurrier's Nightcrawler has driven me up a wall personally. However, I don't go tweeting around that Siceberger is terrible, he's the worst writer, and blah, 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 because that's not helpful. Like, I've spoken to a friend who has read Spurrier's Sandman run, I guess, and my friend said that he was surprised that this run for Nightcrawler of his wasn't great because he really enjoyed Spurrier's Sandman. And I said, that I mean, it makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, like, maybe he did a great Sandman. I haven't read it yet. Maybe he freaking did. That's fantastic. Yeah. But, like, this just isn't for me, and that's fine. But I love the character so much, I give another shot. And I also still want to be able to, you know, hopefully see this creator succeed with a character I love. That's why I keep trying to, you know, like, even if he's not going to write Kurt the way I want him to, or in my picture-perfect way, I still want to see him do something great with this character in some form. So I think that's important too. But if I didn't want that, then I would just not read the book and say, I'm out. Peace. Like,
yeah, you're not going to go tweet at him and harass the dude.
No creator deserves that threat. Yeah. Like, even creators that actually are very problematic. Like, come on, guys. Like, nobody deserves that. They're all doing their best. And at the end of the day, all these creators started out as indie creators, and we need to remember that too. So, like, if you're not going to talk to an indie creator like that, why are you talking to them like that? It just doesn't make sense. Because I would never talk to an indie creator like that. So why would I even consider that? Just because they're writing for a Marvel book that, oh, now I can put that on them, they deserve it because they're immune? Absolutely not. They're not immune. At the end of the day, we're all fans and we're going to disagree. You know, there's going to be a fan that's like, I love Thor so much and this is how I see him. And you're going to say, cool, I love Thor so much and this is how I see him and her and whoever else ever has the name Thor, the title. You know what I mean? Like, it's just all good fun. That's what it's all about. And that's why, like, it is cool talking about the differences in what people see in characters sometimes. But when it stops getting fun, you should probably stop the conversation.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. Well, Lauren, like I said, it's been so fun talking to you. And I literally, like I said before, I could keep you here all day and we could talk more about podcasting, X-Men, all that kind of stuff. But like I said, I'm not going to do that to you. I know you're busy and you got other stuff to do. But I just want to say again, thank you so much for coming and nerding out with me today. This has been so, so fun. I mean, we're 100% going to do this again. Hopefully we'll have the whole crew here. But before we get out of here again, Friendly Neighborhood Comic Show, everyone, please, please, please go subscribe. Go watch her videos. They're on a hiatus right now, but I'm sure that you're going to be back and rocking and rolling soon. Can't keep Lauren down for long. But Lauren, I'm going to give you this opportunity. I'm going to hand it off to you. Tell the people where they can find you on social media. I obviously just shouted out the channel, but this is your time to plug yourself.
Well, thank you. No, it's such an honor to be on here. We will definitely do this again. But who knows? It might be next year because the holidays are coming up and we're all going to be in shambles. So, but that said, whatever social media you use, I'm pretty much on it. Just depends on how active I am. My handle is at Friendly MBHDBI. It's on Twitter still. Blue Sky, I'm trying to use more. Threads, I have it. Instagram. And then the comic show's Twitter is at MBHD Comic Show. And they're on everything too. Twitter, Threads, Blue Sky, Instagram. Like, literally, if you need to find us outside of Twitter, if we ever leave, or me, you can find me. You just have to use the same handle. I try to make it as not complicated as possible. But yeah, no, I thank you so much for having me. Thanks for taking the time and letting me ramble. Again, I have very specific thoughts, but with comics and characters, especially lately, I'm like dead focused. I know in the past I've been like all the comics, and now I'm just like, no, I care about three things. And if these three things aren't good, I'm going to be like, oh man, I got to dip. But no, it's been such a pleasure being on. Hopefully, yeah, I'd love to see Cap and Gorgon. They're always so fun to talk to. And also mess with a little bit. It's always a good time with you guys. So
of course. And I mean, talking about rambling, that's what we're here for. That, like I said before, this is the place to do it. Let's get into some characters. Like I said, we're going to have you on back again for sure. And next time we want all the rambles. Just go. I'll just sit here and you can go and I'll just quietly listen. But again, Lauren, thank you so much. This has been such a pleasure. I'm going to be throwing the links to her show, socials. I'll throw up on the screen for y'all. So y'all don't make sure you don't miss it. Go subscribe, go follow her. And I mean, like, again, I just can't thank you for being such a positive voice in the community, being such great friends of us and everyone else in the nerd world. I know that everyone would agree with me. And I mean, you said that Cap and Gorgon are the best of us. I think you are the best of us, friend, because like I said, you are just so kind and friendly and welcoming to everyone that you interact with. So if you're not following Lauren, do so right now. If you like this episode, please consider giving us a like and subscribe. I hope all of your stacks are fat this week. I hope you stay hydrated, and we will see you guys all next time.
I'm gonna do this all day.